You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Coming up, death is a part of life, but we often have a difficult time talking about and acknowledging what happens at the end. We'll talk to the authors of a new book that says talking about death can make it easier on those dying and their caregivers. Now, the Trump administration is proposing a change to the country's food assistance program, and it could mean an estimated 3 million Americans no longer have access. This is the administration's second attempt to tighten requirements to the food assistance program, also known as SNAP. And according to WPR, this round of proposed changes could also jeopardize access for 25,000 people in Wisconsin. Sarah Halpern-Meekin is an assistant professor of human development and family studies at UW-Madison. She specializes in social and welfare policy, among other areas. Sarah, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
What would these changes from the Trump administration do to the current food assistance program?
So they're really focused on what's called categorical eligibility, which is a sort of set of things. So one thing that the categorical eligibility rules allow is for when a person has already gone through the benefit application process for one assistance program, like for cash welfare, what we call TANF, then they don't have to go through that application process again for the food assistance program, what we call food share here in Wisconsin, because they've already had a caseworker go through their documents and determine their eligibility. So that's one part of categorical eligibility that these proposed changes are aimed at. A second part of the categorical eligibility rules are that the federal government sets asset limits for eligibility. That says a household can't have more than $2,250 in assets and still be eligible for the food share or SNAP program, as it's known at the federal level. However, it will allow states to apply for waivers from having to examine people's asset levels and allow them to just focus on people's income levels. And many states do that, including here in Wisconsin. And so one of the proposed changes is that states would no longer be allowed to not look at assets. They would have to do the asset test in addition to the income test in determining eligibility.
I want to follow up on a couple of those points. First of all, why is the Trump administration saying that someone who is applying for food stamps should have to do a separate application, even if they have gone through a different process?
So there are some concerns with the looseness with which some states have been approaching that categorical eligibility rule. So the federal law says that you have to sort of be involved in some way with one of these other programs. It could be TANF, it could be the disability program, but it doesn't define what that involvement has to look like. And there are stories of some states being very lenient in how they define that. So that could be you go and talk to somebody and you haven't gone through the whole benefit application and approval process, and that then triggers categorical eligibility for SNAP. And so some people are concerned that that is too lenient.
And the other question that came to me as you were speaking is, you refer to assets. What would they count as assets? Because the figure you gave, a little over $2,000, is not very much.
No, it's not very much. So the expectation is that you have spent down virtually anything that you have. So before you turn to the government and ask for assistance, the program, many of our government programs are set up so that you have spent down not just your income, but any sort of nest egg, college savings account, retirement account. You should be wiped out before you turn to the government and ask for help. And that's what those asset limits are intended to enforce.
And are the assets strictly kind of cash equivalents? Or say if a family member gave you a car so you could get to and from work and get your kids to and from school, would that count as an asset?
There's a certain value over which a car would count. So a certain amount of car value basically is allowed, and then over that it counts as an asset.
We're talking with Sarah Halpern-Meekin. She's an assistant professor of human development and family studies at UW-Madison. We're talking about the proposed changes to food assistance programs that the Trump administration has proposed. And Sarah, can you give us a basic idea of how the SNAP program works? say you do qualify, what do you get and what can you use it for?
So the amount that you get is going to depend on your household size. The average benefit is actually fairly low. So the average benefit nationwide is around $127 per person per month. That works out to a little over a dollar per person per meal. In Wisconsin, that average benefit is actually even lower, a little over $100. So the maximum benefits are reserved for people whose incomes are the lowest. And many people who are on SNAP are actually in a household where somebody is working. So they don't qualify for those maximum benefits. So once you qualify, you get what's called an electronic benefit transfer card, which kind of looks like a credit card. And each month that's loaded with money that you can use in many grocery stores and some farmers markets. And it allows you to buy food. So you aren't allowed to buy any kind of household supplies. You're not allowed to buy alcohol or cigarettes. You're not allowed to buy diapers. You're not allowed to buy any kind of prepared food. So it's really only allows you to purchase groceries.
The head of Wisconsin's Medicaid program spoke to WPR about these proposed changes yesterday. His name is Jim Jones, and he works at the Department of Health Services. And here's what he had to say.
You're actually sort of forcing people into even dire straits. They can't save money for college. They can't save money for those things that, you know, aren't going to be emergencies in the future.
And so that goes back to the assets and what people can have. What do you make of the point that he's making? Is this really putting people who are in already a precarious position in an even more dangerous one?
So I think there's a whole scope of people who receive SNAP. I think sometimes people have a sort of stereotype in their head of what somebody who gets food assistance might look like, but there are a lot of different people who get food assistance. And so maybe for somebody who really has very limited income and has for a long time, those asset limits are irrelevant, right? They don't have $2,000 to save. But we also know that there are lots of folks who lose a job and all of a sudden have no income. And the question is, I think with these asset tests, and I think it's a really difficult one to wrestle with, should we ask those people to spend down, you know, their little nest egg, their retirement savings, their kids' college fund before they can turn to the government and ask for some help when they've all of a sudden lost their job?
I remember doing a show on Central Time about how often people's incomes are not stable. So they might do seasonal work. They might have periods of the year where if you look at, oh, they're bringing this much every month and this much is going out, why are they having a hard time? But it's because other times of the year that, you know, it doesn't come out. It seems like these rules would be especially difficult for people who might not have the same amount of income month to month or even week to week.
And that's the case with the SNAP program now. So depending on how frequently your eligibility redetermination happens, and that can be every few months, you might go from being eligible to ineligible because you had one high paycheck, right, just before your eligibility redetermination. So that's an issue that exists currently with the program, even before these proposed changes. But as you were saying, there are a lot of people who see their incomes rise and fall, and that can be people like preschool teachers who might have a consistent job for 9 months of the year and then need to scramble during the summertime months.
And how quickly can someone apply for and start receiving food assistance? Like you said, in those cases, maybe a preschool teacher knows and can, you know, get a running start on it. But like you said, sometimes people just lose a job and it's over that day. How quickly can those wheels turn?
Well, they actually can't turn immediately because you have to show your past pay stubs, right? And so if your past pay stubs show that you have money coming in, you're not eligible in that moment. So you actually have to be in need before you can apply. And then the question of how fast those wheels can turn depends in part on where states are with how they treat these categorical eligibility rules. Because if they have categorical eligibility in place, somebody is going to be might be eligible more quickly than if they have to do an asset test or they have to recheck their paperwork that they've already submitted someplace else.
We're talking with Sarah Halpern-Meekin, Assistant Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at UW-Madison. We're talking about the changes the Trump administration is proposing to the current food stamp program, also known as SNAP. We're also talking about how it works. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think of these changes that the administration is pushing for? Do you yourself use food assistance? Do you worry about abuse of the assistance program? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation after a short break. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're picking up our conversation about the SNAP food assistance program and changes the Trump administration has proposed to it. Sarah Halpern-Meekin is with us. She's an assistant professor of human development and family studies at UW-Madison, and she focuses on social and welfare policy. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think that food assistance is an important way to reduce hunger? Have you ever relied on food assistance yourself in your own life? If so, tell us what the experience was like for you. And what questions do you have about how SNAP works? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Sarah, what do we know about people who use food assistance? Is it often a short-term emergency way to fill a need, or are the majority of the people on it long-term?
So it's going to be different for different sorts of folks who are on the program. So a substantial proportion of people who are getting food assistance are elderly or disabled, and so their incomes are not likely to be going up and down. However, as I said before, a substantial proportion of people are actually living in a household with a worker. And so for some of those folks, it's going to be temporary, right? Wages are low right now, or you're having trouble getting hours right now, and that will change. Some other people work consistently, but given their family size and the low wages that they might be earning, they might consistently need help over time.
And we talked about the fact that 25,000 people in Wisconsin could be at risk of losing benefits if these changes go through. How many people in Wisconsin on average are using food assistance every day?
It varies a lot from county to county. So, you know, if we look at the proportion of kids, for example, who are participating in the food share program here in Dane County, it's about 1 in 5 kids who is in a household that's getting food share. We look, you know, 45 minutes north in Adams County, more than half of children are getting food share. So it really varies across the state.
And we talked about the fact that there are certain types of food that can be purchased, and it is only food. There are often comments that it should be even more restricted to what people are allowed to buy. What's your take on that?
So I think there are some difficult questions here around how paternalistic this program should be. How directive should it be of what people can buy? Should people only be allowed to purchase foods that we deem healthy? And who gets to decide what counts as healthy? Because from one nutritionist to another, that's going to totally change. Does red meat count as healthy? Does juice count as healthy? Some people think that all carbs are bad, right? Should you be able to buy any carbs? So, you know, I think those are really hard questions to answer about who's going to get to make those determinations about what these dollars should buy.
I've seen comments from people who are using food assistance who have gotten critical comments from other people in line, for instance, having a cake. And it turns out that, you know, it's a birthday for a child. And you know, that sense of we're never quite sure what other people's lives are like. But there does seem to be a tendency to feel like, well, if our tax dollars are going towards this, we should have a say.
Yeah, that's definitely true. We do that especially toward people who are lower income. We don't tend to do that the same way for people who are benefiting from government assistance in ways that are more hidden. So we don't turn around to homeowners who are getting a mortgage tax deduction and say, are you running your home the way that I think you should? You should paint your home green and not yellow. We don't feel like we can make those comments. And so I think it's not just about whether or not somebody gets assistance from the government, but it also has to do with our perceptions of lower income people in the United States.
Let's go to the phones at 800-642-1234. Mike in Hancock is up. Hi, Mike.
Hi. You're doing a fantastic job of explaining the situation. I work with one of the universities, Concordia University. We have a Closing the Achievement Gap consortium, and what you're talking about is a huge equity issue. I'm really concerned not only about the adults and families, but also the kids and how they're able to access food in the richest nation in the world, and also living in a farm community that is intent on selling food product. There really seems to be a disconnect. My question, in addition to sharing the point, is who can people contact in regard to the administration to at least put forth a point of view on this before a final determination is made?
Thanks for that call, Mike. Sarah?
So the USDA is collecting comment on this. And so there's a comment period that goes on until September on these proposed changes. And so I encourage people to go online and submit their comments for or against these proposed changes. I did want to pick up on two things that Mike pointed out that I think are really important. One aspect of categorical eligibility that we haven't talked about yet is that when families are eligible for SNAP, it makes their children automatically eligible for free or reduced price lunch and breakfast. And so when people go off the SNAP program, it's not just that they all of a sudden have less food at home. It's that they're also going to lose their access to food at school. And then the other thing Mike brought up that is really important to pay attention to is the fact that SNAP is not just a benefit that goes to an individual. That individual has to spend that money for it to have any value to that person. And that means money goes out in communities. So when people have less to spend, it means communities receive less. Grocery stores have less. Farmers have less.
We're talking with Sarah Halpern-Meekin about the proposed changes to the Federal Food Assistance Program. She's Assistant Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at UW-Madison. And let's go back to the phone, and Nicole in Duluth is up. Hi, Nicole.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi. I want to just mention that I think that implementing the assets is a positive thing to eliminate abuse of this program. When we have families that are driving around in Cadillacs and have multiple homes and have extravagant things, but yet still are sitting here collecting food stamps, or I'm sorry, SNAP, also utilizing the lunch programs, that families like myself who have six people, who both parents work, and we're not making more than six figures, but as a family of six, we can't utilize any programs within the government to try and make sure that we are feeding our families every single day. And we're out there doing what we need to do every single day.
All right. Thanks for that call, Nicole. And Sarah, that is a commonly held belief.
I think Nicole's speaking to such an important point, which is that a lot of families, it's a stress making ends meet, right? Whether you're above or below the federal poverty line, whether you're median income, whether you're even higher income, depending on where you live, depending on what expenses you face, it can feel really stressful making ends meet. And Nicole's story speaks to that. To get to her larger point, you know, if you see somebody who maybe is driving around an expensive car and getting government benefits, one of the things that I've learned as I've interviewed people over the years, especially lower income parents, is that often people face a lot of fluctuations in their lives. And so we don't know, you know, if we see somebody having expensive shoes or an expensive television television or something like that, we don't know what their life looked like in the past. And so it's a little hard to interpret what we're seeing in the moment. The other thing is people get help from family, and that help can come with sharing a house or sharing a car. And so sometimes what we see on the outside covers up some of that complexity that goes on in people's lives.
Thanks for that call. Let's take one more caller, Mo in Oconto. Hi, Mo.
Yes, thank you. Two things. One is, it seems like a lot of people want everyone else to have less than they do, and we're talking about big tax cuts, but now all of a sudden we have to cut these programs. And the biggest thing is, there's a multiplier effect. When you spend money in the community, the people working at those stores get a wage, and then they turn around and spend it. So there's some type of multiplier effect. I don't know if it's $2 for every $1 spent or something like that.
Thank you for that, Mo. And Sarah, you did touch on that before, but Mo is bringing up a clear point there.
Yeah, I think some of the estimates that I've seen are around what Mo was mentioning, around $1.70 goes out, you know, is generated for every dollar in SNAP. And that's why at the federal level, sometimes SNAP is viewed as an economic stimulus program, because it doesn't just help people who are in a tight situation themselves, but it can help communities that are in a tight situation, because it gets more resources flowing through those communities.
You said that it's currently in a period of commenting, and people can share their opinions. What is the timeline for these changes? When we'll know if they are or are not going to take place?
So the comment period goes through sometime in September. I don't remember the exact date off the top of my head, but at some point in September. So, you know, during this next month, if people have opinions on this, want to read up on it, you know, now would be the time to do it, so that your opinion can hopefully factor into what direction the administration decides to go.
How often do we see these types of overhauls of these large federal programs like SNAP?
Well, we see attempts at changing things in Congress. And as we know, things are not moving along so speedily in Congress these days. And that's why the Trump administration has turned to proposing regulatory changes that are sort of outside of legislative changes. And so that's the area where we've been seeing action more recently, just because action at the congressional level has been stalled.
Well, Sarah, thanks so much for joining us and for coming into the studio.
Thanks for having me.
That was Sarah Halpern-Meekin. She is an assistant professor of human development and family studies at UW-Madison. We were talking about a proposed rule change from the Trump administration that would cost 3 million Americans, including up to 25,000 Wisconsinites, potentially their access to food assistance.